Okay, welcome back to our last class. And they say, I don't know how much you study handwriting, but they say if you are writing on the board, writing anywhere, but as a teacher, if you're writing on the board and your writing starts going downhill from left to right, that it means you're depressed. Did you know that? It means that you're not excited about things. So I'm a little depressed that this time is over. And I did not do that purposely, all right? You can actually, it's just a side note, not anything to do with math, but just a side note, you can watch your students writing and learn a lot from how they're writing. Mm-hmm. And did you know that if you have them write something about themselves and they make their name or personal pronouns referring to them really small, they have a very small self-esteem? That is, like, there have been studies about this stuff. So anyway, just a side note there. My students actually know this, so if I start, my handwriting starts going downhill on the blackboard, they're like, Mr. Joe, what's wrong? Why are you just screaming? So it keeps me in check, and yeah, I think it's good for all of us. So for our format today, we're going to go over things a little bit differently than we have been so far, and then we're going to turn the recorder off and have some time to talk. Several of you have given me some really good ideas that I have not come across that I would like for you to demonstrate on the board. If you can think of one that you would like to demonstrate for other teachers, feel free to do that. So keep that in mind for the end of the classes. Hopefully it won't take too long. I feel a little bit like Harold Dean said a bit ago. He said that he has a lot to pack into the next 45 minutes. I'm going to just go through it fairly rapid fire, maybe not have a lot of discussion right now, and then we'll open it up and talk after a bit. So to start out, I'd like to read a little bit out of this book. And I'm sure you're all familiar with this book. But who knows where I'm going? Where do you think I'm going for useful math in threads, the thread that runs so true? Does anybody know where I'm headed? What story do you think I'm looking for? You know, Gerald. Anybody else know what story I'm going for? Okay, so do you remember, what was it? Was it Dan or Don? Conway is all I can remember, his last name. The teacher almost couldn't convince him to come to school. He wanted to go get married and just go on with life, and education was regarded as a very, very small thing. And the teacher convinced him to come for reasons other than just academic purposes. He needed his muscle and his brawn in school because he was worried about some of the other big students that were coming that were not planning to let him keep teaching. But anyhow, he got him convinced to come, and the guy Hawkins, of course, the guy who was the problem, gets beat up by the teacher, and a fellow stops by, a local farmer stops by, to see the teacher that beat Guy Hawkins. And the teacher has no idea that's why the farmer stopped in. However, this is what happened. Farmer stops by and he says, "Are you Mr. Stewart?" "My name is Bert Eastham," he introduced himself. "Yes, I am." Sorry, I said farmer, he's a coal miner. Shaking his cold, dusty hand, "I'm glad to know you. You wouldn't have any drinking water, would you?" he said. "I'm a bit thirsty." "Yes, we have water in the schoolhouse," I said. "It might be a little warm." "Warm water will wet the throat," he said. "Then let's go get it," I suggested. He followed me into the school. I looked into the water bucket. It was half full. He started to lift the dipper to drink. "Don't drink from that dipper," I snapped. And he let the dipper fall from his hand. "Is it poisoned?" he asked, startled. "No, not that," I said. "But no one drinks from a dipper here." He looked curiously at me. "What do you use it for then?" he asked. "To dip water from the bucket into drinking cups," I said. "Wait a minute, and I'll make you a cup." I tore a sheet of paper from a tablet and made him a paper cup. He dipped the water from the bucket and poured it into the cup. "People don't drink one another's slobbers this way, do they?" he laughed after he had finished drinking. But I wasn't exactly thirsty. I wanted to see the man that whipped Guy Hawkins. He beamed admiringly as he looked me over. "That boy came to Upper Lonesome Church one night," he continued, "and he nearly beat my boy to death without any reason. He wanted to fight. He started it with my boy and beat him up. Whipped Les Brown's boy and Booten Tolliver's boy the same night. I wanted to see the first man to whip him. Say," he continued, as he looked me over from head to foot, "you're not such a big man. I'd have thought you had to be a giant to whip him." And when we walked out of the schoolhouse back toward his wagon, he stopped. He stood for a minute and looked at big Guy Hawkins, who was now enjoying himself playing games, and I was looking at his wagon load of coal. "How many bushels do you have on this wagon?" I asked. 25 bushels," he said. "You weigh your coal?" I asked. "Nope," he said. "Then how do you know how many bushels you have?" In the meantime, Don Conway walked over where we were standing. "Guess at it," he said. "I believe you've got more than 25 bushels in your wagon. You got any way of finding out?" "Do you know the length, width, and depth of your wagon bed?" I asked. "Nope," he answered. "Don, run in and fetch the yardstick from my desk," I said. Don brought the yardstick and did the measuring, and I put the figures on paper. Don was very much interested as I figured the number of bushels in the wagon. According to my figures, you have 39 and a fraction bushels, I said. Since your coal was stacked a little higher than the bed, I wouldn't be surprised if you had over 40 bushels. What? He exclaimed. I've been selling this wagon bed of coal for 25 bushels for the past 7 years. How can I really find out how much coal I have? Have it weighed down at the valley, I said. They have scales there. Bert Easton, greatly excited, climbed onto his coal wagon and drove down the road. That afternoon, just a few minutes before it was time to dismiss school, there was a knock on the wall beside our open schoolhouse door. I went to the door. There stood Bert, his face beaming. His face was so dirty with coal dust that his not too white teeth looked white as dogwood blossoms in April. His smile was so broad he was showing nearly all his teeth. Thank you 100 times, young man, were his first words. I don't know how I can ever repay you. I had 43 bushels of coal on my wagon. Here, he exclaimed, excitedly showing me the waybill. I called Don Conway from the schoolroom and let him see it. Something told me to stop here and take a look at you, Bert Easton said. I'm glad I stopped. I've been swindled for 7 years. Well, you can rest assured you've given good measure, I said. Your conscience won't bother you. You've not cheated anyone. But I won't be cheated from now on, he said. Oh, I wish I'd have gone to school. Can't even write my name. You can come here if you want to, I invited him. Too late to start at 50, he admitted sadly. Too late when a man is married and has 9 children. His words were worth more to Don than my words or any other teacher's words. Don now realized the value of a simple education. I've just been thinking, Mr. Stewart, whether you were married or not, Bert Easton said. I know you're old enough to teach school, you wouldn't be here. And when you're old enough to teach school, you're old enough to be married. No, I'm not married, I laughed. Haven't any prospects. Then I have a prospect for you, he said rejoicingly. See, I want to do something for you. And that's where I'm going to stop. All right. You do need to read the rest of that story, though. It is amazing. Okay, so we all knew that, right? We all knew the value of math and what it's for, and we're taught a lot more about that now. But that's just a great practical way to help us understand math. So let's answer the riddle. What's wrong with the riddle about the bellboy and the $30? We'll start there. What is the problem? We've been talking about it being flawed. If you were sitting in here, you might have heard somebody up here saying the problem was flawed. Remember, the problem is that they split a hotel room worth $30. They go to their room, and the proprietor says, oh, I can reduce it by $5. That should be our clue, right? That's where we're going wrong. So when we reduce it by $5, now what is the new price? $25, right? So when he's taking the $5 back, and this is where the way the question is written, it sends our mind down the wrong trail, and we start adding credits and debits, and we're not allowed to do that. We start adding credits and debits together. So what ends up happening is the price is reduced by $5. We have $25, and the bellboy has the two, right? So that is how we get to 27. We're not actually, you can't get back to 30 by adding debits and credits together. Does that make any sense at all? It's just literally is set up for a liar figuring. That's what it amounts to. Which reminds me really quickly, and I don't have this on the board, but have you seen, what does percent mean? Let me just quickly do this while I think of a part of 100. Very good. Have you seen charts that look like this? And I remember this used to upset me so badly when I was in school, and it mattered to me whether my friends had John Deere or New Holland. There were Ford at the time, Ford tractors, or whatever other off-brands they had as far as I was concerned. It really upset me when I would see charts like this, and you'd see a chart where it would show that, and it would say percent on the side here, right? It would show percent on the side, and then we would have something like maybe 80 right here, and then 90, and then 100, all right? And it would show that they wanted to compare, let's say 88, right here. They wanted to compare 88 to 98, and they'd have this bar graph, all right? So they go 88, and then they would have another bar showing how much better performance they had here. What is deceiving about this?
It makes it look twice as good, but it's only a tiny bit better.
Correct. You see that? It makes it look twice as good, but it's only a tiny bit better. And I've come across that in Apologia. He says that is something that is, again, liars figuring. As far as I'm concerned, I'm going to be a little careful. Maybe they didn't have enough room to get down to 0%. I don't know. But this is how evolutionists are pushing some of their numbers, too. I don't know if you've noticed that or not, but Apologia is really good at explaining how they make it look like, you know, there's this either large or small difference, whichever they want to twist it. So watch that. Percent means per 100. It doesn't mean per, this is just 20, right? Represented is only 20, not 100 represented here. So watch out for liars that figure, I guess you could say. Okay, so no missing money. Let's see, why don't we start with the first thing I like to do is talk about folding a paper. Have you tried this one? How quick can you fold your paper? If you would fold your paper up, just tell me the answer. What's your input?
I think you can do it
7. 7? Who's done it 7? I don't know that I've ever done it 7. Have you gotten 7 out of it? What was that?
I used the hydraulic press.
You used the hydraulic press? Well, so you don't believe me if I would tell you that last night I went and got a really big paper and folded it 43 times? It was huge, like huge. I had to go to Portland. I'm not serious. What was that?
Yeah, I would question your method.
You would question my method. Did you have reason to question my method? And if so, why?
Because you're still doubling it. It doesn't matter how big the paper is.
It doesn't matter how big the paper is. What matters? It does matter how big it is. It matters how big it is this way.
Right.
Right? It matters how thick it is. So I'm going to go across a couple of numbers that tend to blow my mind. Think of this a little bit. So you can fold it 6 times relatively, you know, easily. I have trouble with the 7. Really, I do. Even just with a regular piece of paper, I have trouble getting to the 7th one. So if you have 0 folds, so we have a piece of paper like this, 0 folds, and let's just say that it is a tenth of a millimeter, something like that, I think is what they are, and then we start doubling. So we go 0.1, 0.2, 0.4, 0.8, we're still millimeters because we're doubling, remember. And then we have 1.6, 3.2, 6.4. I am now at 6 times. That's at folding at 6 times. We're at 6.4. And notice how often we're folding and it's not adding up fast at all. The 7th time makes 12.8 with a tenth of a millimeter. The 8th time makes 25.6 millimeters now. So we're not tenths of millimeters, we're 25.6 millimeters. And that is right at what? What's the English measurement for that? 1 inch, pretty much right at 1 inch. Very good. So if you can, in fact, do it 8 times, which you can't, I don't think you could do it 8 times without a vise and a hammer, actually. It takes both of them to get them folded around. You'll be about an inch thick of folded paper. That's 8 times. 9, from 8 to 14. When you get to 14, does anybody want to guess where we are going from 8 to 14? So that would be 6 more folds, double. Just a random guess. Anybody want to guess? Like the height of what? We were 1 inch, and 6 folds later. So as tall as I am. Average man, 6 folds later. So at 14, you're an average man's height. 3 folds later, you're at a 2-story house. 3 folds later, because you've doubled each time. That's at number 17. Do you see why I didn't get to 43 last night? Where do you think 43 would actually take us? Yeah, to the moon. Who said to the moon? To the moon, good guess. 43 folds, we would have reached the moon just before the 43rd fold. No kidding. That's the power of doubling, and that is the same concept. That remember the story about getting paid a penny a day? And like moving around the checkerboard and adding, or doubling every time, not adding one every time, but doubling every time. So these numbers are, yeah, it's just amazing how they work. All right, so we're going to leave that for now. And we're going to go, at between 26 and 27, I wanted to say that, between the 26th and 27th fold, we would have crested, we would have just gotten to the top of Everest, of Mount Everest. And see, I find that so amazing because we could easily get to 7, and you start folding a pair, or to 6, and yeah, whatever. Several folds later, it seems, you're going to be at top of Mount Everest. That's how fast things double. All right, I think it is time for review. So we'll do review on what we have so far. I'm not going to have anybody write things down today, nor will I write them down. Let's just take a look at what we have. 353 times 11. Let's just say the answer. Let's take a second and look at it and then say the answer.
3883.
What was that?
3883.
I like how you said that. Did you catch how you said that? I think that really helps us with mental math. Instead of saying 3883, we look at it, we see we have a 3 on both sides and 2 8s in the middle because we're adding the 2 together. 75 times 75, so we have a squaring one.
56.25,
very good. 7 and 8, and 5 and 5. 83 and 87.
72.21.
Ah, perfect, 72.21, that's great. Let's see, so we're going to forget about this for a moment. Get this out of here so it's not quite as confusing. I plan to come back to this red line at the very end if I don't forget. Remember that 3 times 15 equals 45, but 2 times 16, going down 1 and up 1, does not equal 45. But remember how this works, and I have most of this math on the board for us. Remember we used 77 yesterday. 77 squared equals 80 times 74 plus 3 squared. Remember that? We have 77 broken down to 80 and 74, respectively, positive 3, negative 3. We multiply those two and come to 5920, and we're going to get to 1 by 2 multiplication in a minute, but what would your method be of multiplying this in your head, 74 times 80?
74 times 80 and add a 0.
74 times 8 and add a 0. Good. So it's very interesting how people think of this differently. I actually would have gone 80 times 7 and 80 times 4. Or 80 times 7 and 80 times 4. So whatever works for you, that's just great. 5920, and then we have to add the 3 squared to that, and we have 5929. All right? And if we recall this one, oh, thanks to Jordan. He brought this idea up. He wanted to work on a 3-digit number, I think is what you asked. So I went home and just kept on, or not home, back to where I was sleeping last night, and kept on going with these numbers. Works perfect. See? 6742 squared. You can go 6744. So positive 2, negative 2 to get to a 0 here. And I realize you're probably going to be pulling your calculator out at this point anyway. It's just fun to see that it works. It's so fun. So if you want to check this, you're welcome to 6744 times 6740. Equals this, plus what am I missing? We all know I'm missing what?
2 squared.
Which is?
4.
So the 0 becomes a 4. And that is the answer to that. All right, so just review there. And now, left-right operations. I wanted to spend a day on this. We can't, so I'm just going to run across them quickly. This is to help us understand. So we've been traditionally taught that we would go 9 and 7 here. And looking at this problem, that is probably just as quick to do. If somebody asks you what 47 plus 32 is and you can't picture that well in your mind, you can quickly think 47 plus 30 is, you say it?
37.
Plus 2?
79.
Correct. So you're only hanging on to two pieces at once all the time. Same thing here, 538 plus 327. So 538 plus 300?
838.
838 plus 20?
858.
858 plus 7? 855. All right, very good. And then you have your answer. And so basically what we're doing is taking the one that we feel we can break down easiest, and breaking it down, putting it together with the others. You can do the same method of multiplication. 42 comes to 40 plus 2, so 40 times 7 is?
280.
2 times 7, thank you, is 14, and 280 plus 14?
290.
All right, very good. And then the same thing with the 900, the 80, and the 7. So we're going to go 900 times 9, and then work our way through like that. Yeah, we're just going to apply through the subtraction. So same thing here, 86 minus 25. And again, you see this on paper, easier to do just looking at it, writing the answer down. If somebody asks you the question, you can think 86 minus 20.
66.
Minus 5. 86 minus 20. 20 again.
66.
Minus 9.
57.
57, very good. He'll allow you to give us that one. And in that case, if you're so close to 30 and you prefer to round up, make the 86 a 30 and then minus 1, I do a lot of that. A lot of that. Yeah. If I'm at a 9, I almost always round it up and then get rid of it. Let's see here. This one. What are we going to do on this one? I purposely didn't put the break it down. So this would say, in the parentheses, we would write what, and what? What plus what plus what? Yes, or minus?
410 and 7.
410 and 7. Very good. Any questions on this part? Because the black is something different. It's actually in black for a reason. Any questions on this part or anything you want to add to it? Okay. So we go to the black part now. What am I doing here? What am I doing with that? So I have the problem solved, and what are the numbers in parentheses?
Casting out 8.
Casting out 8, I like that. How many of you cast out 9s in subtraction regularly? You regularly do in subtraction? Okay. So I didn't do a lot of that. I thought, why not just reverse it, right? What's the rule for casting out 9s in subtraction? Because a couple of things change. Go ahead and tell us. Who raised their hands and said they do it? Go ahead, what are the rules?
You subtract the top two numbers, and that answer should equal the casting out 9.
Okay, so he said you subtract the top two numbers, and that answer needs to equal what you have on the bottom. Do you mind if I correct that and say you add the positive and the negative together? Is that okay? Because
yeah.
I think it's pretty important that we get that across to our elementary students and as they're getting into high school, because they need to get rid of that idea of subtracting. It just seems to work a whole lot better if we can transition the right to the negative. So we have, this is a negative 7. This negative sign comes over here. And then you can actually go ahead and cast out 9s just like normal. So this is going to be, what's the answer to 8 and negative 7?
1.
And so let's take a look at this and make sure 2, 7, yeah, right? See, we have 1. If you yes.
Are you talking about digit sums right now?
Yes,
yeah,
correct.
Yes,
this is digit sums. That is correct. And the only thing that I've run across, and you can tell me this too, so if you have a negative number when you're done here, what do you do at that point? Have you run into that?
Well,
true.
So you add a 9. If you add a 9, you will return to the same number that you had here. Mm-hmm. How many times is casting out 9s wrong? What percent of the time is casting out 9s wrong? Or what percent of the time will it let you down? Because think about it. 8 and negative 7 could come to the same answer. So you just put different numbers in. 3 and 6 are 9. 2 and 7 are 9. You know. So 4 and 5 are 9. How often will it potentially be wrong? Do you know statistically? So 1 in 9. 1 in 9 times it will potentially be wrong, according to statistics, on casting out 9s on digit sums. So you can cast out 11s as well. And then your chances are 1 out of 11, so a little bit better. And I have never done that. I don't know. I really didn't run into that in school, I don't think. I think I just came across that after school. Okay, so that is all for that, unless you have questions or additions. Please feel free to give us more info on that. Anybody have more on that?
Makes more sense. I've run across several times where I double-checked and the distance came out wrong.
Yeah.
So it's good to know it's 1 in 9 chances.
There, yeah.
I might have run up casting out 11s because, yeah.
That would help a little. It really does. It helps just a little bit. It's just a little more secure.
Yeah.
Right? Just a little more secure to go 1 and 11. Okay. Now, this is just a fun fact. And I came across this one from, I forget the guy's name. I meant to write it down. I'm sorry. I'll try to get it for you by the time we're done. I thought I would remember it, so I didn't write it down. But he is a fellow who's just fascinated with math. And his theory is that we tend to not... Curtis Granderson. His theory is that we tend to not have any story in math. So he said that his students tell him that, well, math and for sure algebra isn't relevant to them at all. And I was telling some of you about this last night. But he said it's not relevant to them at all in their lives. So why would they care about algebra? Because it doesn't apply. So he asked them, well, how many of you have read some fiction or taken in some fiction over the last week? And, of course, everybody puts their hand up, whether it was a movie or whether they were reading a book or whatever it was. And they love it. And they come to school and they talk about it. And it's not relevant to them at all. And they know very well that it's not relevant to them. So he's like, what draws them into that? So he started doing experiments, and that's what this is about. He did an experiment with a 1 kilogram block, and a 1 kilogram block with a wall beside it. And in this experiment, he was doing this digitally, so in this experiment, he took out all factors of friction except for the wall stopping the block. So the wall will stop the block when it hits, and he sends this ball banging into this ball, or block, this block into this block. How often do you think they will hit each other and the wall? How many clanks do you think there will be before they'll spin off into oblivion, never to come back again, with no friction? So let's think of it this way. Bang, right? That's a given. One time. This one's going to go bang. Two. It's going to come back and hit this one. Three. Will that be enough to, what do you think, push them off into oblivion?
I push them off into oblivion, on the left.
What's going to happen to the other one?
It'll say, I hear what it is at the beginning.
No, there's no friction.
Even with that.
It'll stay right there because there's nothing to get it off of inertia.
Because you're saying the other one will have stopped it.
Yeah.
And the other one will take off.
Will stop the one on the right. And because of the law of inertia, things are less tender than the interest.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there's nothing to get it moving off into
it. Okay. So on his screen, this is how he played it. On his screen, he played it this way. The 1 kilogram box hits this one. This one hits this one. They hit each other one more time. It slows this one, but doesn't stop it. And this one speeds up, and they follow each other out to oblivion, never touching it, whether or not where they stop, whatever. That's how he played it. The point is this, 3 clanks. And then he took this box and increased it by a power of 100. So we go from 1 to 100. And did it again. How many clanks do you think he got that time? And it's just a guess, right? And it's fun if you watch. It's like... And the big one goes sliding off. And they get, you know, it all happens in a really short burst. First there's like, boom. Then they hit here and it takes off. 31 times. Okay? And the 31st time is like way out here. This little guy is coming out, catching up. Then the big one goes away. Right? The 31st time. He did it again. Does anybody want to make a guess where this is going? And I don't blame you if you don't. I would have never, ever caught it.
So now it's 10,000 or 1,000.
It's another power of 100, so 10,000. So we've gone from 3 to 31.
3,100.
Good guess.
3,200.
Actually, 314.
All right.
Pi.
Pi.
Pie. I'm not kidding you. Pie.
You just might not have a soul and not care about that almost.
You know what I mean? Like, seriously. Those bouncing boxes count pie. And it just keeps right on going in powers of 100. And he had this big circle up there, and he said, how? And that's what I'm saying, how? I have no idea. And there has to be so many other things to discover. And I feel like if we could give that sense of wonder to our students, maybe it's never going to, you know, it's never going to be up there on par with a novel, right? Never. Not a really good, fascinating read. But still, there's some wonder to that, at least for me. Any input on this? We'll talk about it a little later, okay? We'll come back to this. All right, now, we're going to talk yet about two more things before we stop so that we can have some time to talk. Maybe three. Factorials. Are you familiar with factorials? You know what So what is this? What does this represent? Gilbert, can you tell us how to do this one?
It's 5 times 4 times 3 times 2 times 1.
Right. 5 times 4 times 3 times 2 times 1, counting down. Okay? So what's the answer for this one? You can do that one really quickly mentally. What's the answer for that one? It equals what?
6.
Very good. So if I would take 3 books or 3 CDs or whatever I have and have them held up like this, there are exactly 6 different arrangements that I can make out of this, correct? Exactly 6. How long would it take me? Depends how slow I am, right? I mean, let's say 30 seconds per, right? 30 seconds or a minute. If you want to do a minute, I'm really taking my time to it. 6 minutes or less. Now, if we take it to a factor of 4, how many? If you have 4 lined up, so 4 factorial is going to be what?
24.
Okay, so I did this, and if you want to come up and check my work, you're certainly allowed to. It was really, really fun to do, and it's actually confusing. It's really confusing to make sure that you don't have, and I have my little code there, and it can be really confusing to make sure that none of these are duplicated. And it can also be confusing to make sure that there are no more to go. But I got the 24, nothing was duplicated, so assuming that our math is right, I was right. So, how about 10? How about 10? So I'll just tell you the answer so we don't take the time. We have 3,628,800. Just to 10. So what is interesting is to tell your students that, guess what? I'm going to have you take these 3 and write out or show me the 6 different orders that you can put them in, right? And then say that maybe tomorrow we'll work up to 4, and by the end of the year we can do 10. See what they say. Did you know how long that would take? You know, just do the math a little bit. Let's say it would take you a minute, just for figuring purposes. That's 60,000 hours, over 60,000 hours, right? And that is, let's see, I wrote it down here, 29 years of full-time work at 40 hours a week is how long it would take to get there. And it just feels like it's just from 3 to 10 is that far, right? But it's just huge. It just explodes, just like exponents. Okay, now we need to do, let's see here. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about fractions yet. We're going to start with this one. This is just a teaching method that I have employed with my students to try to help them be able to understand quite a few different things in math, and this is really simple. So we're going to pretend that this is 0, this is 1, and inches, whatever you want to call it. We just go from 0 to 1. So just somebody just say the fraction in the middle.
1/2,
very good. Middle of that.
1/4.
Good.
3/4.
Oops, 3/4. And middle of this?
1/8.
Good. And keep going.
3/8. 5/8.
7/8. And let's come back this way this time. Go ahead.
15.
Good job.
13/16.
Okay.
11/16.
Where did we go? Oops, 11/16. You're right. Thank you. Where was 13/16? All right,
11/16.
All right, here we go. Okay.
9/16.
And after they do this, often enough to get bored of it, you won't have to tell them how to use tape measures any longer. You won't have to explain music notes much longer. They start to see, and then if they really still struggle with it, then I'll have them draw arrows and make equivalent fractions of everything. Like not reduced, but equivalent fractions of everything, so they can understand that in 1/4, you know, that 1/4 is actually 2/8, or 4/16, or you can keep on going as far as you need to make the point you need to make. So just a little tool that I've used in math, And the last thing that we're going to go over before opening it up for everybody is this. I think it's a big deal, back to mortgages, back to whatever you want to relate percents to. I think it's a big deal that children understand what percent means, that it means per 100. And this is just something I have done for the past couple of years. How many days of school do you have?
160.
160, okay. Anybody have more than that?
180.
180, okay, good. And do you know how much of the year has passed after the first day is gone, or do your students know? So you can tell them 1/60th of the year has passed, right? Or 1/80th of the school days, I mean, are passed. Or you can figure the percent for them. So what I would have, not figure it for them, have them figure it. So I have them do this. I have them go like this, and they have to fill out a little paper, and they despise it because it just feels like busy work to them. But I say they despise it. They do to start with. We go like this, and they have to change it to a decimal, at least to the thousandth or ten thousandth. It just depends on what we're looking for. And then they have to change that to a percent. And at the end of the year, they are actually midterm, they can watch and see what's happening. So they can see that the percent is moving with the days gone by, and they can see that we can have a percent of anything. You see, it's easy for them to think that a percent is just something of 100. Well, if you divide everything into hundredths, then you can have a percent of anything. So this is just a little tool I use to try to help them to understand. And also, I think it helps them to understand how they get their grades. That their grade is based on the total. Doesn't matter what that number was, that's what their grade is based on. Okay, now we're going to do a couple of math tricks and we'll stop this and go with that.